Good evening, all. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. And this time we begin the TechNet. TechNet number 1623 of the series that began in September of 1982. Tonight I thought we were going to change the usual order and go straight over to the space report, because there was supposed to be a launch taking place a little bit after 8 o'clock tonight, which is viewable from the East Coast, a launch from Virginia. But that got canceled until something like 7:40 tomorrow. Got canceled 24 hours. And there was another launch to the Chinese space station, which I think did take place. We'll be hearing about that from Paul. We dropped. Main purpose of the technical grant, you guys already know, is for the curious people to gather and help each other learn how radio equipment works. The magic of radio, being able to send that signal to Don Far by means that are not quite clear. The action at a distance is kind of magic. So we study our antennas and transmission lines and transmitters and receivers and the propagation modes. And there's 26 or 27 different kinds of ham radio. The one you're listening to right now, 2-meter FM repeater ham radio, it's just one of the 26 kinds. If for some reason you're discouraged with it before you give up this extremely educational hobby, try at least one or two of the other 25 kinds. Let me drop. We have a rather loose schedule that we follow, where for the first hour or so, we take check-ins from people who do have a question or a comment. And so we take those in order. That's followed by John, KC2WGB, who maintains the mailbag, by which people who don't yet have the right license or the right equipment, so that they can't talk to us directly, they communicate with John with their questions, and John selects a few of those that have general interest. That's followed by Paul, WS2N, who has spent a good fraction of his lifetime studying everything that takes place in space by way of National Aeronautics and Space Administration, the European Space Agency, the Southern Observatory, all of these many space agencies around the world. Let me drop. You should also know that all of the TechNets are recorded. If you haven't got the chance to stay up so late so you listen to all 4 hours of it, we start up at 8 o'clock and go to 12. But all of the TechNets for the last 10 years are recorded, and you can play them back by going to the website of KC2NJI, Mike, and that's at www.amateurradio.tangovictor. You go there and you'll find 10 years of recordings. Choose the right year, the right month, the right week, and you can play back past TechNets. A few days after today, like say Wednesday or Thursday, this recording for what's taking place tonight will appear there. Let me drop. There's another website by Mike number 2, K1MJM, that also supports the TechNet. And that site is limarktechnet.com. There you'll find photographs, graphs, articles, and other things that support the TechNet. So at this time, we're going to take check-ins from people who do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in because you're listening. After 34 years of TechNet, we believe somebody is listening.
anything, we don't hear it, so you can talk.
Okay, the way a person signs into the TechNet is to give me your call letters, your name, followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. A good sign-in would sound like this, W-2-R-Y-Y, Joe and yes. So, if you have a question or comment, please sign in right now, K2-R-I-W listening.
W-2-R-Y-Y, Joe, yes.
Stephen, yes.
Stephen, please repeat your call letters.
KD2-HUC, Kilo, Delta 2, Hotel Uniform, Charlotte.
Okay, so we got Joe and Stephen. Who was the other person trying to check in? Give me your call letters and name right now. So far we have Joe and Stephen. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name right now. Okay, we're going to start with what we got, and maybe some other people will check in. So Joe, W-2-R-Y-Y, looks like we got lots of time tonight. You're number one on the runway. You got it, Joe.
Well, good evening, Dick. How are you? W-2-R-Y-Y here. Very simple question, actually. The only talk I've heard about cell phones catching on fire. Here's a simple question for you. How many amps does it take for the battery to put out for the thing actually to start going on fire? What would you estimate? 2 amps, 3 amps, 4 amps, 10 amps? Because it seems like these things are generating a lot of heat very quickly. What do you say about that?
During the Friday noontime luncheon that takes place in Millville almost every single week, I was there, and Eric and I, KE2EJ, had quite a conversation on that. Eric is convinced that it's not the current output or input to the battery that's causing an explosion. It's overcharging. When you buy a Samsung cell phone, it comes with a particular charger that charges the battery to a particular status in voltage and current and stops. Quite often a person will have some other brand of charger where the connector happens to be the same, which will overcharge the battery. Lithium-ion batteries are extremely vulnerable to being overcharged. So when you do overcharge, they start making heat. So the current output, the radio itself, probably cannot draw enough current to create the explosions that we've seen. Overcharging is most likely what it is, according to Eric. W-2-R-Y-Y. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, but in some of these cases, I've heard that the people had the phone not being charged, and it just seemed to spontaneously just go on fire. You know, it wasn't connected to a charger, it was just, they just was using it or had the thing on, and it started going on fire. I mean, some of these cases you see these things, they're plastic is extremely distorted, and it looks like it takes a lot of heat to be able to do that very quickly. I just wonder what they fuse these things with as far as the batteries. And I would think that they have a fuse, a series of battery coming and going to the charging circuit and supply current out to the phone. Would you think so?
Now, once again, Joe, you're assuming that the overheating is created by excess discharging current. I am hearing a crazy sound coming out of my radio, a rumbling sound. Let's see if I can fix that. When you overcharge a NiCad, a lithium polymer battery, the failure mode it goes into is internal current drain within the battery itself. If you overcharged it and you began the failure process, and then you stopped the charging, and 10 minutes later you're actually using the radio, and the failure mechanism has already begun, it starts an avalanche-like process, and pretty soon the internal short in the lithium polymer battery starts behaving in that way. So the fact that they weren't charging it at that time doesn't mean they didn't abuse it by overcharging during the previous half hour, so to speak. That's the explanation I've been given, Joe, for the battery to be supplying enough current to the radio, and the radio drawing that much current. That's a very difficult to support scenario. The amount of current that battery can dish out safely is pretty high. The radio can't draw that amount of current. So excess drain current as a failure mechanism might not be the failure mechanism, Joe. To me, 2RYY, K2RIW in the tech net.
K-Bank call Zulu.
Okay, I can understand that. Next station, Ted. Jump there, pick it up.
Mr. WB2, QGZ, go right ahead, Joe. Tell us, I mean, Bill, tell us what you know about this.
Hey, good evening, WB2 QGZ. So kind of from what I heard banging around was the, so Samsung, when they did the original recall on the S7 Edge, which is, S7 Note, or the Note 7, I guess is what they call it, is the, that's the only one of the 7 series that seems to have the problem, was changing batteries. I guess they were suspecting battery chemistry or battery quality. And even with the new batteries, they tended to fail. Now, I happen to have an S7 Edge, which is just a different model, slightly smaller, same basic operating system and everything, and that one does not seem to spontaneously combust. The thing is, with all of those phones, they have a faster, aggressive charge mode, which you can select, and it allows the charger. I don't know whether it takes a higher voltage in over the... it's power connector on the USB if you use a compatible charger, but you can charge one of those phones in something like 30 minutes, and that's stuffing a lot of energy in there when the normal charge for that phone, right? Would be, maybe something like 4 or 5 hours at, even, so what's the biggest USB wall wart you can get? It's something like 2.1 amps, and a lot of the small chargers are something like 500, 700 mils, maybe an amp. So you're putting a lot of, in other words, you're pretty aggressively charging it. The phone gets kind of hot when it's charging. Now, I don't always charge mine in the aggressive quick mode unless I really have to, because normally I'm just plugging it in overnight. But I think that probably has a little bit to do with it. Means in which they're rapid charging that battery, and then maybe it's a combination of the charger, and then the battery does not have the correct internal protection, or a compromised internal protection, or a manufacturing defect or something, and a combination of both of those. But the accelerated charging thing always makes me a little bit nervous. Back to net.
Thank you, Bill. You described your experience and your belief. Has anyone else given you any backup information? I believe you're right. I'm just wondering if anyone asked you where your information came from. What would you say on that one, Bill? WB2QGZ, K2RIW.
I saw an industry, a couple of the industry publications have daily emails, and my recollection was one of them said that the original S7 recall involved swapping batteries, and obviously that didn't work because now the new batteries are out in the same config and they're doing it again. So it seems like, from that source, which was RCR, or Fierce Wireless, I think, or something like that, the S7 Note or the Note 7s are done, and I guess that next Note is going to be an 8, something like that, and it seemed like it wasn't solely the batteries that were causing the issue, so that's where it came from.
What change do you believe Samsung made when they recalled the particular unit they thought had the failure, and they replaced it with another unit, which eventually may be a much smaller number of failures, but it also had failures? What change do you believe Samsung thought they were doing to fix the problem? Over to you, Bill, K2RIW.
Not 100% sure, but anecdotally, everybody seemed to feel they were changing the batteries, trying a different manufacturer's battery. With the similar specifications.
And I think that's exactly what I heard also, Bill. So do you believe I'm at least close to right that when you charge it too aggressively, particularly if you overcharge it, higher than normal voltage, greater than normal milliampere hours, that there's a particular kind of failure mode that a lithium battery will go into, where the failure mode of overcharging creates an internal short circuit where high current starts flowing within the battery itself, and that it's not high current coming out of the battery to the external circuitry, creating the overheating. That's my belief, and I wonder if you feel that could be close to true, Bill. Over to you, Bill, K2RIW.
Well, generally, you know, again, most of the charges, I don't think it's really necessarily going to be initiated by plugging it into a different charger. Most of the other chargers are going to make less current than you call it rapid charge mode that you get when you use the Samsung factory charger. That's going to give you more current, more voltage, whatever they use to do that aggressive charge. But, yeah, I mean, so you need to monitor input current, input voltage, temperature of the battery in charging and discharging, and output current and output voltage. So there's a lot of syncing that's going on, not only in the phone when it's charging the battery, but in the battery itself. So not 100% sure what the fault is. It is kind of weird that they don't necessarily burn up on the charging, but they'll burn up in use. But, you know, I believe those S7, Note 7s are also configured for that wireless charging, so they have some kind of a transformer device in the back cover that you can put on a pad, which will charge it that way also. And I believe that's installed in every phone. And buying that, sit-on or lay-on or couple-to-the-air transformer type charger is also in there. So not 100% sure what's cooking. Perhaps just a bad design or the way they charge it or monitor the current. But, you know, again, I don't necessarily think that the using the wrong charger, so to speak, is initiating that.
Hey, KE2EJ. I was talking about the conversation you and I had, Eric. I have some further words to add to this, but tell us what you know about the subject. You got it, Eric, K2RIW.
What I got from a number of people is that it isn't so much the charging and the charging voltage and all of that stuff, it's the actual material, the dielectric material that the battery itself is made from. That's where the issues are, where is it beginning to break down quite a short. And if you've ever looked at a lithium polymer battery, it kind of looks like a capacitor where it's long sheets of material that have rolled up on one another. And with the breakdown of the dielectric material, you wind up with a dielectric made out of. The dielectric itself absorbs the electrolyte, which is a unique chemistry. So, anyway, that's the long and short of it. K2RIW
technology company, which eventually became Motorola. I'm aware of a product of theirs, which is a barcode scanner, where they built one and a half million of them. Every one of them had a lithium polymer battery. Each and every battery had a circuit built into the battery to make sure you could not overcharge it in voltage, overcharge it in current, or undercharge it in voltage. The circuit would protect the battery in all cases. Of those 1.5 million 9000 series barcode scanners, and you can go into many supermarkets and you see the guy running the supermarket doing inventory. Quite often he's using that exact brand. And they've had, to my knowledge, essentially no failures. I know of one particular failure that occurred with a battery on a charging station that occurred in the factory once. But other than that, very few. So the built-in circuit that's doing that protection, lithium batteries, you don't want to discharge them below a certain point. You don't want to overcharge them above a certain point. Otherwise, terrible things happen. Since that battery in the Samsung telephone is so darn compact, I don't think there's enough room in there to put in that protection circuit. and I think that's some of the aggravating factor. Does that sound reasonable to you, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet?
This is DVZ, quick answers.
K2RIW. KE2EJ. Okay. Well, what we're really talking about is defective manufacture, or rather, poor design of the physical materials that are being used to create the high density, the amount of high current capacity of this particular battery that was developed for this particular phone. Whereas that in the past, various different types of lithium polymers, depending upon their electrolytes, and there's various different kinds of electrolytes that are all similar, but they've actually gone a long way in terms of technology, looking for electrolytes that are, you know, X percent more efficient than the next one. But the actual issue with the Samsung batteries is not so much the charging issue, or the fact that the controlling chip is not built into the battery, it's built into the charger. It's more the physical and chemical properties of what the battery is composed of that's leading to these problems that they're having. K2RIW.
Very fine, Eric. Now I'm going to go over to Hal. Hal, the original question asked by Joe is, what specifically is the failure mode in the Samsung cell phone that's creating this overheating? So I wonder how much experience you have with those Samsung telephones, Hal. K6DPZ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
W TechNet K6DPC. Well, I'm familiar with lithium batteries. As far as I'm used in a Samsung phone, let's face it, when they put out a phone, they're trying to be cost effective. So they figure the chances of an overcharging situation or something like that are a very low percentage of the volume of phones they're going to be selling. They didn't realize, you know, these phones are right now coming back from hotcakes. Lithium batteries are great, but like anything that's great, there's always a back door. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, according to some reports I've been hearing, people have been using other than the Samsung charger, which could be an aggravating factor. So that's what little we seem to know at this time, Joe. W2RY1, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, very good. Well, I learned something. I guess everybody else learned something, too, about these phones, because it seems to be a very popular topic in the news lately. And on to the next guy, WH4YY.
Okay, I'm hearing another person signing in. That other person, give us your call letters and name one more time. K2RIW. Okay, AC2IS, Bill. We're getting that tone back again that had been eliminated from a while. We get an extra tone when somebody comes in on the 975-375 input. So, Bill, give us a little bit more audio and tell us what you know about this subject. AC2IS, K2RIW in the TechNet. Yeah, Bill, your audio is very low. You're coming in the 975-375, and Eric, 975-375 was not being repeated to 85 during that last transmission. And I'm also hearing K2UPS. I'll pick you up with you in a second, Rich. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. I'm in the middle of Brooklyn. I'm not about to do anything, so, you know, just deal with it and carry on for the moment.
Okay, very fine. So, Bill, it was sometime in the middle of your conversation that I realized you were not being repeated to 85. So, too bad you're not able to go into the 2585 directly. So, give us your information one more time. Give us a hell of a lot more audio, Bill. Your audio is very low. I'll listen to the 375 output and repeat what you say back on 85. AC2IS, K2RIW in the TechNet. Let's see if I'm going to repeat it. AC2IS, K2RIW, are you there, Bill?
Yeah, Dick, this is Bill. I just tried hitting the repeater, the other repeater. I guess I did not make it. But to repeat what I said, phones nowadays use USB chargers, and USB chargers are basically the same from one to the next. They have different current ratings on them, but they're not specific to any particular battery. So anything that makes the charge appropriate for the battery is inside the phone itself, AC2IS.
Okay, that time what you said on 375 did get repeated. But once again, your audio is very low, Bill. You got to shout into that microphone. Okay, thank you for that information. Rich, K2UPS, you use lots of cell phones. I wonder of all the cell phones you've owned, if any of them was ever a Samsung. And did you have any worries about your Samsung if you happen to own one? K2UPS, mobile. I'm going to guess you're in Pennsylvania, but you're going to correct me on that. K2RIW, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, to UPS Mobile. Good evening, Dick. No, I'm not in Pennsylvania yet. I had delays, and I'm home. Still only in Ohio. Not even up to Zanesville, so gonna get home late. I've never had a Samsung phone, only Motorola's, and most of them have had either the micro or the mini USB connectors on it, and those are directional. They only fit in the phone one way. My newest phone that I've had now for about a month or so is a Motorola Moto Z Force, and this has a new type of USB connector called USB-C, and it is kind of like the opposite of a Apple Lightning plug, but it's a socket where the lightning is more like the male part. This is kind of like a female part instead, but it can handle a lot more current. The older ones were only good for several watts. Going through them, the USB-C can handle upwards of 100 watts or more going through it without any difficulty. There's also the USB protocol. I think it's 3.1 in addition to something they're calling the power delivery system, a power diversity system. And both the cable and the charger have to be compatible to use all those features, but it allows high current to get it to charge quickly and then taper off the charge as it gets full up. You don't keep that very high current going in until it's all the way full. But there's all sorts of thermal sensors and stuff that's going on there. The Samsung phones, in my opinion, definitely have a manufacturing defect in them, and something is not quite right. I saw a good video. If I can find a link, I'll forward it to you, using thermal on phones that were actually being destroyed in front of the camera, and then taking them apart, and some that have happened to other people, and they were able to pinpoint the area inside the phone, and there was some good information in there, Dick. Back to you.
That's very interesting about the USB-C connector with much higher current capability. So your cell phone has that fancy connector, Rich. As such, if your cell phone was thoroughly discharged and you wanted to give it a rapid full charge, roughly how fast can that be done? And you've obviously done it a few times and you believe it's safe. K2UPS, K2RAW, and the TechNet.
Yeah, the phone, and I can't even control when it's going to rapid charge or not. It takes care of that all on its own. And as long as I'm using the Verizon chargers, either the wall charger or the 12-volt charger for it, it'll go through that, and I'll even get an indication on the screen that'll pop up saying that it's in turbocharge mode. Now, if I use a different cable or a different wall wart for it, or 12-volt charger that fits in the 12-volt port, it'll still charge. It seems at the same rate, but I don't get the indication on the screen that it's in turbo mode. But if the phone is dead and I need to give it a quick boost, within 15 minutes, I believe, I'll get 5 hours worth of life, or battery life added into that battery. So 15 minutes will give it a, you know, several hours worth of heat.
That 15 minutes of charge giving you 5 hours, is that approximately 50% charge of the capability of your particular cell phone? In other words, if you did take the time to fully charge your cell phone, are you good to almost 10 hours? That's an awful nice brand you got there, Rich. Go ahead.
Well, the internal pack on the phone is good for, I believe, about 24 hours or more of use. And then I bought an extra pack. This phone has something called Moto Mods that are different accessories you can put on it. One of them is an external battery pack that when the internal pack drops to 80%, the external pack starts being used. It drains down to zero, or to the pack shuts off, and then the internal starts being used again. With both of those packs together, I can get more than 48 hours worth of battery life out of it. I also have a speaker attachment that fits right on the back. JBL speakers. That pack that's in that gives you pretty decent sound as opposed to plugging something in. They also make a projector so that you can sit your cell phone on a table and aim it towards a white wall, and whatever's on the screen of your cell phone gets projected on the wall up to about a 60-inch diagonal or so. Then Hasselblad also makes a camera that snaps onto the back of the phone, but the camera in the phone is pretty good. I don't know why you want the external one, but it's pretty neat, the different accessories they have for it.
Very nice, Rich. When you've got that external battery pack by which you can go to 48 hours total use, wow. How do you charge that external battery? Can you charge the external battery and the internal battery simultaneously? K2UPS, K2LIW. Go ahead, Rich.
The only way to charge the external pack is while it's attached to the phone. And yes, when that goes on, and it's just magnetic connections that hold it on, just rare earth magnets hold it on, and there's a series of about, I don't know, 15 or 20 little gold pins on the back of the phone that make connections with the different mods that you put on. And there's no other interaction from the user. But when that pack is on, I have two battery displays on the front of the phone telling me the main battery is such and such percentage full, and the mod battery is such and such full. And then when I plug in a phone to charge it, it does charge both batteries simultaneously, but only the main battery will get the turbo charge, because that circuitry, part of that, is built into the phone itself. The external pack takes a little bit longer to reach 100%.
Am I correct in assuming that you can be using the radio at the same time it's being charged? In other words, you're charging it from your cigarette lighter, so to speak, in your vehicle, and you're using it at the same time it's being charged. And is it one of those situations where you don't have enough output connectors where you can't charge and use the earphone simultaneously? K2UPS, K2LAW. Go ahead, Bill. Rich.
That's correct. Like, it's plugged in now, but I'm using Echo Link through a Bluetooth headset. Now, I can also stream audio to the Bluetooth headset, but it does not have one of those, 5mm or 3.5mm headphone jacks that most cell phones have today. They did away with that, and if you want to use regular headphones or earbuds or whatever, they give you a little adapter. It's a cable about 4 or 5 inches long that has a USB-C connector on one end, and then a 3.5mm jack on the other end, so then you can plug any headphones in that you want. But if you're going to go that route, then you can't charge it at the same time you want to listen to it. But all the other functions work.
Okay, G2RY. Mr. RY, we missed the beginning. Give us your full call, your name, and proceed with your information. K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
2RIW. KG2RY. Hello, Dick. How are you? Two things I thought about. You were talking about that Samsung phone. And, you know,
know, I know a lot of overheating happens because the processes, you know, they become overheated from use, and the higher the clock speed of the operation of the chip, the greater the chance that they will overheat too. And the other thing that I've learned in charging any device, you know, with a USB power source, USB cable, is that the higher the amperage, you know, the higher amount of current going through that cable into the device, the easier the chance for the battery to wear out. So if you're putting more current into the battery, it will wear out quicker. And if you use a cable with a connector that is lower amperage, you know, the battery tend to live longer, although it takes longer to charge. KG2RY.
David, your information aware you're using rapid charge and it uses up the life of the battery faster. You might be right. I'm wondering where that information came from, David. Over to you, David, K2RIW.
Roger this. K2RIW, KG2RY. I went to B&H to buy an HD audio player. They said that it takes a 3-amp power supply to charge the battery. But he recommended one that is less, either 1 or 2. He said that the life of the battery would be much longer, you know, you'll get much more out of your battery if you take longer to charge it. Go ahead.
Okay, so a person at the store gave you that information, and it could very well be good information. Then again, it might not be traceable to the Bureau. There are certain kinds of batteries that actually have slightly longer life when you charge them more rapidly. I didn't say it's the lithium battery in question here. I know we've got fairly far left of center of your original question, Joe, but still I think we've learned quite a bit about cell phones and cell phone batteries. And as you can tell, we don't have the whole story. And as you research it further and find more, please come back and tell us what you find, Joe. To B2LYY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, well, I wasn't researching it, but maybe I shall do some poking around to see if I can find some information on it, but it was just sort of a curiosity question in general just to bring up in case other people have experience with it. I don't happen to have a phone like that. I use something that's much, much older in technology, so I don't have to have that problem with my phone. Back to Ned.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Once again, you ask good questions. Steve, KD2HUC. What would you like to discuss tonight? We'll discuss anything except electronics, radios, and antennas. That's a joke, of course. KD2HUC, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Good evening, Dick. My question tonight is on the Ameritron AR80A amplifier. I picked one up. It was used, obviously. I had to rebuild the entire high voltage power supply. It was fluttering and for some reason something, I believe it was the capacitors, might have been breaking down. Anyway, it has a single 3500 Z tube in it. And when I tried tuning it up into a dummy load for the first time tonight, all of a sudden the plate current went down. And I started getting negative grid current. Now, since I am very much an amateur with any type of tube equipment, I killed the power, and fortunately this was an hour or so before the TechNet. So, what would cause negative grid current, and where should I start looking for, you know, suspect components and whatnot in this amplifier? KD2HUC, back to net.
All Steve, I think you were the guy last week asking us about how to reform electrolytic capacitors, what voltage, how long you cook them, and so on. Slowly bring up the power. And it sounds like you attempted that operation. The few words you gave us led us to believe that it wasn't successful, and therefore you did a complete replacement of the power supply. Now, when it comes to a high-power amplifier, like with the 3-500Z, and if you've got a high output network, and I think you do, the biggest error you can make is to lightly load the output. Sounds like good common sense to set the loading control to a low number so it's being lightly loaded, so you're quick, you're sneaking up on the amplifier slowly. Good common sense. Dead wrong. If ever you hit resonance on the plate circuit, and if you're giving it nearly full drive, and if the output is loading very lightly, the voltage swing on the plate becomes extremely large. Extremely large voltage swing on the plate has two possible disadvantages. Number one, it can arc over the tube itself, or it can arc over the C1 tuning capacitor. And number two, quite often on amplifiers, you will see negative grid current, screen grid current if it's a tetrode tube. And I presume you can see negative control grid current on a triode tube. So start off with heavier than normal loading on the plate, on the tuning of your Pi network. The C2 capacitor, set it to a high number. There was an article in the Doctor Is In. Let me drop it. A few months ago, I sent a letter to the Doctor Is In section of QST Magazine, and they gave further information on this. It referenced a particular website where a guy goes into more of the details of this. So start off with heavy loading on the plate and get it into resonance. And then the next step of tuning is to get tuning in the direction of maximum power output. If you had a third wattmeter looking at the output of your amplifier, and you start off with heavier than normal loading, and you resonate the plate circuit with the C1 capacitor, then you can start backing off on the loading in order for the output power to increase. But whenever you start off with very light loading, you could get the condition that you've seen, Steve, and it's a slightly dangerous condition. You don't want to dwell there. Thank goodness you did turn it off before you did get an arc over. KD2HUZ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, yeah, Dick, you know what? We had this conversation a while ago where you had told me about making sure, you know, with a tube amplifier, you didn't start off with light load. So the load capacitor was fully open, you know, as per your recommendation. The other thing is I did not have any drive on the amplifier when this happened. The amplifier was keyed with zero drive, and it wasn't when, you know, immediately when the amp was keyed. It was keyed, and all of a sudden, I was making an adjustment to the radio, and without any drive, all of a sudden, I saw this negative grid current come, and this was into a 50-ohm dummy load. Is it possible that I may be having an issue with the component, something that I may not have checked yet? KD2HUC, back to net.
One thing that you said is a little bit confusing, Steve. You said you didn't apply any drive, but you were tuning the radio. So, and you had it in the transmit mode, so I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. Maybe you really were starting to slowly sneak up on the drive. By way of the metering on the front panel of most amplifiers, you can flip the metering and find out what is the plate voltage. Sometimes you can measure what is the control grid bias voltage, or cathode in your case. I think you're running grounded grid, so what is the cathode bias voltage and what is the grid current? You did see negative grid current. But this is before you had applied any drive. If there was really no drive, and with voltage applied on the tube at the proper voltages and the proper biasing resistor on the cathode, in order for the negative current to occur, it doesn't guarantee, but it suggests a gassy tube. So your 3-500, maybe it needs some wake-up procedure, in other words, filament only for a while, to to remove some of the gas by way of the gettering material. So quite a number of tubes will get crazy good currents if there's gas running around inside the tube. How long has that been since that tube has been fired up, Steve? That could be a contributing factor. KD2HUC, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, a couple of things.
One, for some reason, the tuning procedure given by the manufacturer is that you key the amplifier, in other words, the TR relay swings, but there is no drive on it, and supposedly you're supposed to adjust the plate until you have 50 mils of grid current, or you go up to, I think it was 150 mils on the plate, whichever comes first. I hadn't even gotten that far. I hadn't even put a hand on the plate knob yet, and you know, all of a sudden I saw this negative grid. Let me let it drop. I did buy this amplifier used. I do not know how long the amplifier was in storage or when the last time it was fired up. It does have an original iMac tube, which according to the internet, they're notorious for becoming gassy. And the chances of running them through a procedure to you know, boil off the gas, so to speak, is 50-50. I was just curious if maybe there was anything else I should check before I think about replacing the tube. You know, I certainly don't want to, if there is something wrong, I don't want to risk damaging a brand new tube. KD2HEC, back to net.
DPZ with a comment.
DPZ, but there was one person who chipped in before you. I think it was WB2HWW, question mark, K2RAW. Was that you I heard checking in, Howie? Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, Dick, you're with me. WD2HWW. It sounds like either the filament or the cathode is touching the grid. If you're going to get negative grid current, sometimes that means the filament has sagging or the cathode is sagging. The cathode is sagging and touching the filament. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, that's a new one on me. Hal, what do you believe can create negative current other than gas, or maybe it really is gas? K6DPZ, K2LIW.
When your amplifier of 3500Z on one of these tried-up directly heated tubes.
Oh. Hal, you've got to speak softer. You're jumping out of the repeater. Please repeat that message. Over to you, Hal, K2LIW.
Okay, I'm talking to Officer Jerry, a big step. Is that on a linear amplifier with a 3500Z tube is causing the problem, yes or no?
Roger. Steve did say he's using a 3-500Z tube. Over to you, Hal.
It sounds like he's got a grid that's filament short. And what he could do, you could flash it. I've done this, I've saved many 3500Zs. You can sell a car battery, go between the filament and the grid, and flash it in the short. Chances are you'll save your tube.
How that flashing procedure, can that also be done with a very large capacitor, like a 1,000 microfarads? Some people do a flashing procedure with a charged capacitor. Over to you, Hal.
Normally that's just really a high current power supply, Dick. And it works very well, because a lot of these 3500Zs, there is a sag on the filaments. This would cause a short, but you could burn the short and the tube will be just as good as new. You won't even see the difference, even though you lost a little grid material.
When you're doing that burning procedure between the grid and the cathode, I am guessing you use both, if there's more than one terminal for the grid, you use both of those grid terminals, and maybe both of the filament terminals. Of all the terminals you've got on the grid, you tie them together. All the terminals you've got on the cathode, you tie them together before the flashing procedure. Is that the recommendation, Hal? K6DPZ, K2LIW?
First of all, 3500 Z is a directly heated tube. It's not an indirectly heated tube. So you take both of your filament connections, put them together, and then you flash the grid. And chances are you'll cure the problem. The grid will burn before anything else does, and you save the tube.
Very fine, Hal. That sounds like good information. There was a third person signing in who started talking before squeezing the mic, so we kept not getting his call. That person, squeeze the mic, wait a second, and give us your call. K2LAW in the TechNet. Okay, maybe there isn't another person. I thought there was. Okay, Steve. Looks like you've got a procedure to follow. Let's see if it'll be successful. And maybe you can even do it tonight and tell us when you come back whether or not it made any improvement. KD2HUC, K2LAW in the TechNet. I'd also try with an ohmmeter to see if you can confirm a short between filament and cathode. You got it, Steve.
Grid, yeah.
That's what I meant. Grid and filament, let's call it. Over to you, Steve.
WD2HWW and another comment.
You know, Dick, I will definitely go ahead and as soon as I get off here, I'm going to run downstairs and I'm going to at least try and home it out. My first question for Hal, is there any specific polarity that I need to observe when I run the procedure, or am I just looking for high current to burn away the metal?
To be on the super safe side, I would put the negative terminal on the grid. That way there's not a chance that you're creating emission, if you know what I mean. So negative terminal on the grid is my guess. I think it probably doesn't make a great deal of difference. I'm going to go over to Howie first, and then Hal in that order if he's got some further information on this. WB2HWW, K2LAW. Go ahead, Howie.
Yes, the reason why I say it was the filament, because when the meter's reading negative current, you got a figure, you got the voltage going, you got the voltage or the current flow in reverse, so the meter's going to read reverse. I had that happen to an amplifier many, many years ago, and that's what an old-timer told me back in the 70s. The guy told me, if you ever see negative grid current, it usually means you have a filament to cathode or a filament to cathode the grid short. Back to you, Dick.
Very fine, Howie. I'm going to make a guess as to what's going on here. In the case of a grounded grid amplifier, which is either running Class A or Class AB, the grid is grounded, the cathode has a certain amount of resistance to ground, and when you apply plate voltage, current starts flowing through the tube. As current starts flowing through the tube, the cathode gets pulled positive by way of the cathode to ground resistor. With the grid being more positive, with the cathode, I'm saying cathode, filament, with the filament more positive by that dropping resistor compared to the grid, that's the grid is more negative by comparison, therefore the meter reads negative current on the grid. That's what I think is the operation there. Is that approximately what's happening, Hal? K6DPZ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
On the amplifier you're talking about, there's different configurations how they do the grid metering. But the grid to filament short, take full filament leads, put them together, and then, you know, use that as one side, because you want to have maximum amount of current, use both filament leads, and then you just flash the control grid to the filament. It's a very simple critical, Dick. It's having the tube physically out of the circuit anyway.
Quick comment, Dick.
Yeah, this is Armatron-80 amplifier that we're talking about. KC2WGB, K2LAW, go ahead, John.
KC2WGB. By the way, Dick, the gentleman didn't refer to the phrase, it was working and then it failed, so under cold conditions, they may not be in contact until it gets warm. So we may have to tap that tube when he makes those connections, just as some information. KC2WGB. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, when you said it was working, Steve, you probably meant you first turned it on, didn't see this condition, From everything you told us, you hadn't yet applied any drive. KD2HUC, K2RIW, go ahead, Steve.
Yes, Dick, it did not, the condition did not occur immediately on power-up. It happened, I would say, probably within a minute or so after. I hadn't gotten an opportunity to apply any drive yet. KD2HUC, back to net.
Happening as the temperature of the grid is exceeding going, and the grid is possibly moving toward the filament because of the temperature that's developed in the bottle. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, that represents a little bit of a problem, Hal. If only when the tube is heated, things expand and make the short circuit. When he got the tube out of the amplifier and tries to do this flashing procedure, there may be no short at that time. I wonder if you've ever used a more elaborate flashing procedure where you allow the filament voltage to be applied, allow the heating and the short circuit to take place, and then do the flashing. I'll admit that's a lot more difficult, but if the short only occurs after the filament is hot, he may be forced into doing something like that. K6DPZ on this Almatron-80 amplifier. Over to you, Al, K2RIW.
Sorry, WK6DPC. Well, if that would be the case, I haven't seen shorts take at that place 3-5 minutes as easy as possible. Disable the high voltage in the amplifier. Take the high voltage leads off the doubler, and then let the amplifier filament heat up, and then flash the tube in the socket, and that will take care of that problem, Dick.
Yeah, we got to be a little bit careful here. During the flashing procedure, you could be putting a ridiculous amount of current through the milliammeter that's measuring grid current. So we got to be careful on that one. Study the schematic and know the voltage you're going to apply is not going to be pigging that poor little meter. Let's hope that if there is a short circuit there, and if the short circuit occurs when the tube is held in a particular position and the tube is outside of the amplifier, if your ohm meter will show you that short, then obviously your flashing procedure directly on the tube should work like a charm. That's the way I see it, Steve. KD2HUC, K2RIW in the TechNet.
If in doubt, put a jumper wire across the grid meter to protect it.
Okay, that's another good protection procedure. Thank you for that one, Al. You've got it, Steve.
All right, well, thank you, gentlemen, for the advice. And I'm going to go downstairs right now and pull that thing out of the amp and see if I can get continuity. And then I will try a house flashing procedure. Maybe it'll save me a couple $100 on the new tube. Thank you, gentlemen. I will let you know how I make out. It's KD2HUC, back to net.
With a comment.
Good luck with that procedure, Steve. KC2WGB, K2RIW, you've got it, John.
At that 350Z, on most of the circuits with the grounded grid, there are about maybe 6 or 8 10-ohm resistors from the grid to ground. So he has to be careful there, too, depending on how that filament is used and whether that line is grounded. So you might have to, you know, check that out on the schematic.
Okay. By way of the schematic, he'll know what kind of a circuit he's creating with his flashing power supply, if the flashing is required. I think there's a 80% chance when the tube is out of the amplifier and he looks for that short circuit with an ohmmeter, it might not be there. And maybe the short circuit is only there when the filament has been heated for a certain length of time, and maybe only when the amplifier is held in a particular position. So let's hope that he can bring that tube back to life, and maybe we'll hear from him later on.
If he had a tube tester or knows somebody who has a tube tester, he should be able to pick that up.
A tube tester for a 3-500Z? Whoa. How many tube testers have you seen for that kind of a bottle, John? Go ahead.
Tom, there's no tube testers other than a piece of equipment to test that unless you're an industrial type of operation.
I have an industrial Hickok, I believe, that does test that too. But, okay.
You've got an unusual tube tester there, John. So
Steve is going to be on the way over to Staten Island to use your tube tester. By the way, out of curiosity, John.